Hi there, and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday, the 23rd of August. I'm Maddie Plale, and this week I'm joined by two of our tipping team. We have Graham Rodway and Keith Melrose to look back on a wonderful York Ebor Festival. We also have action, Group 1 action from France. There was two top-class races yesterday in the pre-Morny and indeed the pre-Romane. So we're going to get stuck into those as well as an in-depth review of everything that happened at York, including some spellbinding performances from some of this season's stars. First off, let's tuck in to one of the highlights of the meeting, which was the Skybet Ebor itself on Saturday. Some rain near post-time. Not sure how much it made a difference to the result, but it was won by Sonny Boy Listen, who wasn't unfancied at around 10-1 for Ben Cohen and Johnny Murta. This horse made a great deal of progress from the rear just to beat Quickthorn in the closing stages. Two joint favourites in Mount Leinster and Illarab were disappointing first up, chaps. Why do you think that was? Do you think that had something to do with the rain, the way the track was running, or the rain?
I don't know, to be honest. The run of Mount Leinster, that was struggling out the back a long way out. It was like a horse that was floundering in bad ground, but I don't think it was that bad ground. They did break standard for the race. The rain wouldn't have had time to get in properly. So I think with both those horses, you know, they're big field scenarios. Mount Leinster's best form as well, remember, had been dominating some small fields, at least on the flat, his best form had been anyway. So there's a few other instances of horses that just did not turn up. I mean, I had a little bit of a win bet on Humanitarian, but he was the same as Mount Leinster. It was his first run of the season. It was an entirely different scenario to what he was used to. And these things will just happen in these big field races. Sometimes you just got to write these off. I think it contributes, though, the idea of those horses running poorly, to the sense that I'm not going to say the Ebor was disappointing, but you want to see a race where it's so competitive. Like, we could have put up 15 horses between us for that race. It was so, so competitive. And you assume that means the form's exceptionally strong, whatever shakes out. I'm not 100% certain that's the case here.
Okay, that's a very interesting point. So therefore, do you not rate this year's Ebor as strong as recent renewals?
It's one of the 10 hardest races of the year, I would say. And on that basis, you want to put a very high figure on the form because you think there's so many interesting horses here. Those are not the related contingencies that you might think. And that's what I think about the Ebor. Sonny, I think there was more emphasis on speed, actually, than there was given credit for. I thought Sonny Boy Liston won it with how he quickened 3 furlongs out to 2 furlongs out. You look at horses like Tribal Craft and Away He Goes, who came from a not dissimilar position on that near rail, but neither of them had the turn of foot that Sonny Boy Liston has, and they just plodded into like 7th and 9th or whatever. Whereas Sonny Boy Liston, who probably won't want to go any further than this, quickened really nicely and got the better of Quickthorn. You know, I think Alunac, his form, he's already had his rise for winning the Old Newton Cup and probably didn't run any better than that in finishing 3rd in the Ebor. So what I'm saying is there are lots of interesting horses in here, and you know, we've not mentioned Max Vega yet, who was an obvious eye catcher, and others like him. But let's just not get totally carried away with the form here, because the likelihood is that only those first four really gave the running.
Okay, some big prices filling the places, weren't there? I was on Hamish and he was a last minute non-runner. That broke my heart a little bit, but probably the right decision by William Haggis. G-Rod, how do you rank this Ebor? Sonny Boy, listen, he had shown really good form, stakes form indeed, before this. And now Johnny Murta's talking about races like the Irish St. Ledger and Melbourne Cup. Do you think he'll be able to make his presence felt? He was wearing cheek pieces again, which was probably key.
Yeah, he is a bit of a speed horse, isn't he? Let's not forget that it's only this season he's been stepped up to staying distances. He'd been generally campaigned over a mile and a quarter and a mile before he competed at Chester when he was behind Japan. And I remember looking at him that day and thinking, yeah, he's got quite a nice pedigree for a stayer, because he was certainly bred to improve for a step up in trip. And sure enough, as he's gone up in trip, he has done. I'm not convinced that he's an Irish St. Ledger horse, but from a Melbourne Cup perspective, you do have to have a little bit of pace about you, don't you, to go close in that race. And I would see him as a contender for that race for sure. But I think he just falls short of the top class stayers over here, the likes of Stradivarius and Spanish Mission, who obviously fought out the finish of the Lonsdale last week.
Yeah. Do you think that there was one horse in particular you'd like to take out of the race? If so, who would it be?
I do like Quickfall. I have liked him, obviously fancied him strongly for Royal Ascot when he won there. And I thought he looked relentless. And he looked pretty relentless when he won, I think it was at Haydock on his previous start. And he looks like a horse with a lot of upside to come. I think he's still quite lightly raced at this sort of trip, isn't he? And Huey Morrison, obviously excellent with this sort of horse. So I think if I was going to take a horse from the race, it would be Quickform. Do you think William Haggis did get it right, Maddie, with Hamish? Because I would have thought that he was hoping for the rain to come, and it certainly did come, didn't it, just before the race? Maybe you wish you'd kept him in. What do you reckon?
That's a good point. I mean, it's funny because the reason for the non-runner says unsuitable ground. And although it, you know, was recorded as good, I think it looked certainly as if Hamish should be okay on it. He's a multiple winner on good ground, I believe. But I more think it was a very strongly run race. I don't think the time was too bad. Therefore, if he wasn't 100% after this first run back in a long time, perhaps it would have just not been the right decision in the long run. Not sure, slightly undecided on that. Keith, you mentioned Max Vega there. Is he your one to take out of the race then?
Possibly. It would be between him and Quickthorn, I think. The interesting thing with Max Vega is they've, you know, horse that had his sort of form last year, most people would have just persevered with trying to make him into a lower graded horse. They haven't. They've plainly brought him back this year to aim him at the Ebor. He got one run. He was gelded over the winter, one run, and into the Ebor. They're obviously thinking handicap route with him because there's a lot of the big races for stayers are these handicaps, and there's potential for him to have a lot more joy later in the year. And yeah, I'd be saying that him and Quickthorn are the two. We've not mentioned Shanro much yet. He made a beeline up the centre of the track. Robbie Colgan, I think, did that deliberately by the look of how he took him out there. And I'm not 100% certain that was the right place to be, and he just faded late on. So maybe there's a little bit more to come from him. He has got some really good hurdles for him too. But as I say, just focus on that first four or five in the race, and because everything else might have had excuses on the day, but they're the ones that you're thinking that could immediately bounce back.
Okay, let's jump back to Wednesday's Judmont International Stakes. It was won really impressively by Mishriff. This was the first domestic Group 1 for him under David Egan for John and Thady Gosden. Can we trust this form, Keith? Because there's some people going around with the school of thought that many of his rivals underperformed.
That's correct, I believe. I would certainly agree with it. Love's not performed. Mahafith and McSweeney haven't quite come up to form. Alan Keir is possibly a horse that isn't going to be, he's going to need a well run mile two at least, and he probably will be slightly better at a mile four in the fullness of time. So for that reason, that marks you down on a six length win, because it's very hard to get a six length win in a Group One like this, not coming out really, really high on the figures. And what's interesting is how the 128, that's the RPR Mishriff got for winning. I was expecting to see something higher because I thought Paul Curtis would struggle to get it that low. But he has. And I think it's when handicappers are often have at least half an eye on the horses around them at the top of the tree. Now, the current RPRs in Europe this year, the best ones, Adyar's top on 129, Mishriff's joint second with St Mark's Basilica on 128, and obviously Mishriff's been second to both Adyar and St Mark's Basilica on his last two starts. And a rating needs to be remembered as a reflection of the best a horse can run to under its ideal conditions. Now, St Mark's Basilica's best conditions might be a small field sprint over a mile two, and he buried Mishriff. Adyar's best conditions might be a quite well run mile and a four up a stiff finish, and he'd give Mishriff a bit of a hiding there as well. Mishriff, you know, a mile two where you've got a long straight to use your turn of foot, that's maybe where Mishriff's best. So even though those horses are very much close together in terms of their ratings, I think who you'd be backing would be very much a case of the conditions they're under. And I think the rating that Mishriff's been given shows you that, look, it's easy to get carried away about six length wins, but we always need to kick the tyres of what's behind.
Indeed. Interestingly, the ARC and the Japan Cup were mentioned as two targets for Mishriff. He's as short as 7-1, as big as 12-1 for the big race at Longchamp in October. But as you're saying, you display doubts about him over that strongly run a mile and a half. So does that make much sense to give him a break now and aim him at those races? Or would you rather be looking towards the Irish Champion Stakes?
In terms of giving horses breaks, that's where I defer to trainers. I don't know what sort of break Mishriff needs. I know he's been on the go a long time, although he was, I thought he was basically given a break before the Eclipse, and the Eclipse was there to try and get him properly ready for the King George. I don't know if now is a time to give him a break, but the Irish Champion would be, that's the sort of race that suits Mishriff for me. He stays a mile and a half, but for me, he's a mile two horse at his very best. These are the conditions, the ones he had on Wednesday, where he's going to show his best form. And I'd be really thinking about Leopardstown, because that's straight at Leopardstown, the way they have to quicken there. It's got all the hallmarks of the sort of conditions that will suit him, more so than an Arc, more so than a Japan Cup. But the reason he's picked up a lot of the Group 1s he has to now is because of the way he's been campaigned. He's been picking the races that are the easiest to win. And I don't know if the Japan Cup would fit that bill. And I don't know what's going to turn up in the Irish Champion, to be quite honest. But a lot of what Mishriff's campaigning is, he's quite adaptable. And he's obviously very, very high class. And once you've got a horse like that, it's a case of picking out the Group 1s he can win. So that's the difficulty for the connections now. I don't think they need to worry too much about what his very, very best conditions are, because under those, he's as good as anything. But away from them, he's just got to avoid the very best horses.
And it's very, very difficult to get your Goldilocks conditions every single time. Last year's Champion Stakes, he was pretty disappointing in eighth there. He could go back to that race and try and beat a Dabe. That was another one of the targets John Gosden mentioned. G-Rod, what was your main takeout from this Judmont International? The other runners, I mean, Alcohol Free, she blatantly didn't stay. Alan Kerr, as Keith touched on once further, Love, is this as good as she is? Mahathath is your miler. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I didn't think that there was much to be taken from those in behind. Love obviously plainly underperformed. Alan Kerr, I think, is a very good three-year-old, but he's not a top-class three-year-old. I thought that the winner was head and shoulders above the rest. Absolutely hammered them. He's obviously very, very high-class horse when he gets his conditions, when everything goes his way. And let's not forget that I thought it was a massive performance to give so much weight to the impressive Derby winner Adyar over a mile and a half on his previous start. I think that's a really, really tough task for the four-year-olds, especially against a tip-top three-year-old like Adyar. And to run him so close, I thought that was an excellent run as well. I think he does stay a mile and a half. I think he's going to be a huge player wherever he goes. He's definitely one of the best around, possibly the best in the world. We're going to see.
You're slightly more positive on him then. And I mean, it's difficult to analyse trip-wise because he, of course, won the Shima Classic over a mile and a half. So he can get it. But whether a sort of European, strongly run mile and a half over more of a galloping track suits him, I'm not so sure.
The one thing I would say about him is that every time I watch him, he always finishes. Always finishes, whether it be a mile and a quarter, mile and a half. He puts his head down and he absolutely runs his heart out to the line. He's going to give you everything that he's got, Mishriff. He's very uncomplicated. He reminds me a little bit of Falbrav from a few years ago, who was a similar type. Wasn't flashy, but very tough, genuine, versatile, and without doubt, a genuine top-class Group 1 horse.
I hate to break it to you, G-Rod, but Falbrav's nearly two decades ago now.
It doesn't seem that long ago to me.
He's top class though, isn't he, Mishriff? It's great to have a horse like him, almost to compare others to, because he's so solid and reliable. Let's compare him to Snowfall then, the Darley Yorkshire Oaks winner, Ryan Moore riding for Aidan O'Brien. Favourite for the Arc now, indeed, as short as 9-4. Do we think she deserves that position off the back of this performance, Grim?
I don't like this horse, do I? I've got myself in a bit of a mess taking her on this year. But then, as I always say, you know, it's not my job to sit here and tell you that Snowfall's a good horse. It's my job to try and get horses like this beat. So I'm never too downhearted when I take them on and they bolt up. But I keep taking her on. She keeps winning. But I still remain sort of slightly not convinced that she's as good as she looks, but nevertheless, she has done it, what, three times in a row now, won by wide margins, in fairly good times. I just have a feeling that when she comes up against the very, very best, she's going to come up short. But, of course, she is going to be getting the fillies allowance, the controversial fillies allowance, which I dislike, of course. And she's also a three-year-old, isn't she? So she'll be getting a lot of weight off the likes of Mishriff. So she might well just go and win, taking advantage of that. I'm not as positive about Snowfall as I am about Mishriff. I think Mishriff is a far better horse. But given all the weight concessions and the fillies and allowance and all that, Snowfall might well be capable of beating him.
Did we learn anything new about her? I mean, Wonderful Tonight arguably didn't bring her best on this quicker surface. Did you think anything that different of Snowfall after this performance compared to what you've seen before?
Not particularly. She obviously had it won from a long way. I think Ryan Moore said afterwards that he felt that from about three furlongs down, he was only really doing a half speed and, he wasn't really asking her for everything and she was always holding them. So she's obviously by far the best three-year-old filly around. But we have yet to learn much more about her because she hasn't run against the colts, has she? And she hasn't, well, she has run against the older horses now, but I don't think she's run against top, top class older horses. Okay, Wonderful Tonight is a very, very smart mare on a day, but she really wants soft ground, and I think it was too quick for her. It was a strange decision to run, to be honest, Wonderful Tonight, because David Menuzio had been going on all season about the fact that this horse must have soft ground, then suddenly decides to turn her up in the Yorkshire Oaks on quicker. And I don't think the rest of them were that good. I mean, Ashada, who Jim Crowley was quite positive about and seemed to really, really like, she definitely didn't run a race because she was tailed off. So, no, I don't think we did learn anything about her, to answer your question, Maddie.
Okay. Ground, as we say, was quicker. Keith, you're our times man. From what I could gather, it was a good time, which I guess would sort of shush the doubters somewhat.
Yeah, I think it was good. There was a lot of good times at York last week. The ground was basically quick all week. So you expect some good times. We got a relatively well-run race here. The horses that, certainly Alba Flora that finished second came through, that came from out the back. A little bit like a rousing horse last year, finished second to Love. Alpinista finished second in that race, was ridden to get second and did. The form doesn't look any stronger than that race, even though Wonderful Tonight was in here in a way that, you know, nothing of that standard was in the race last year against Love. In terms of what we're learning about Snowfall, you know, it was quite a good time, and she's run it's just a weight of evidence now that's building up. You know, you get one slightly dodgy looking low to mid 120s performance, you can maybe start to brush it off, but once she's done it three times, it becomes a lot harder to do that, and under the varying conditions that she's done it under too. So I think you've got to take her level as where it is. As pretty legit as well. I keep saying that Oaks was flattering, and it is, but it doesn't matter now because she's done it here and at the Curragh as well. I'm not sure she does deserve to be favourite for the Arc. She has still got, you know, if we think Adyar's as good as ratings are telling us, and Hurricane Lane as well to an extent, they're arguably stronger opposition than anything Enable had to beat. And Snowfall obviously is going to be compared with Enable in a lot of ways. I'm not sure I'd have her as short as she is. I think she's there a little bit on style. The substance is just building up by increments. But I still, you know, we've still got no evidence she's better than a mid-120s filly. And you need to be at least that to win an Arc. And you're certainly not, that's not the sort of level at which I'd back a three-year-old filly at 9-4 for an Arc.
Who would you back? I'll give you both an imaginary tenner. Who would you put it on? Keith, you go first.
Well, I've already done Antipost price-wise on the Arc and put up Hurricane Lane. I think he might, given, you know, not a King George, given a sort of race, the mile four sort of race where they put more emphasis on quickening up, I think he might be a better horse than Adyar still. I think he's quicker. He's a horse I like an awful, awful lot. So yeah, I'd probably go for Hurricane Lane.
Okay, and G-Rod?
I would probably stick with Adyar. I think that he's just about the most impressive Derby winner we've had in recent years. And I like the way that he stays and sees out his races. I think that at Longchamp, you really do need to stay because usually the ground's fairly testing. And I think that race might suit Adair. Of course, he will get the three-year-old allowance as well.
Okay, brilliant. Now, given we have some real analytical brains on this week's podcast, I think one of the races that we really should be digging into is the Weatherby's Hamilton Lonsdale Cup. Of course, Stradivarius narrowly beating Spanish Mission by a head. Quite a tactical affair, just the four runners and Stradivarius getting on top very much close home. It was a ding-dong battle throughout the final furlong. Are we now accepting that Stradivarius is not operating at a level he once was, or do you think he didn't face his ideal conditions here, Keith? Because Paul Keighley is insistent that this horse wants soft ground, despite connections saying that it's not what he's after.
Want is, well, that's a word that's fraught with danger anyway, because as somebody that taught me the game a long time ago said, well, have you asked him? You know, horses... You know, the wants are very, but I think Keel's there, to be quite honest. I suspect Keel's is saying that with a glint in his eye a little bit. I think Stradivarius is perfectly adept on soft ground, for all connections tell you. Not so certain about him actually wanting it, but I don't think I think ground comes alike to Stradivarius personally. And certainly in terms of the handsome is as handsome does approach, you know, the people will tell you, oh, he definitely doesn't suit soft ground, but I'm telling you what he can do. And I'm telling you that he can run as well on soft ground. I'm telling you that the best run of his career came on soft ground. So he's absolutely fine under those conditions. Whether he's as good this year, I think it's a little bit of both in this regard. This isn't where he was last year. He was better than this last year, beating Spanish Mission, who has improved this year for me by a couple of pounds. He's only been with Andrew Balding a year or a little more than that. And I think he's a better horse now. Stradivarius... Frankie tried to win doing as little as he could, I think, if you watch him. He's desperate not to raise the whip. He has to in the end a couple of times, I think. But he's won that. But this is tactical races are what Stradivarius wins. And luckily, he's a stayer, so he gets in a lot of tactical races. It's hard for me to say exactly where he is at the moment. I think you'd be right. And on the percentage side, on the percentage call, if you said he's not quite what he was, that still might be good enough, because there is no evidence there's any other steers in the division that are better than that low 120s level that he is probably still capable of, that Trushan almost certainly is capable of. And I don't think there's anything else really that's definitely a 120 steer, unless they decide to send Wonderful Tonight down that route, and obviously they're going for the arc instead. So he might yet still...
down that route? Sounds like you're quite interested in that as an experiment.
She stays... a mile six, well, she probably isn't good enough to win an arc. And she likes soft ground, and a lot of these good staying races turn up on soft ground at the end of the year. I'd be open to it. I'm not, you know, I look at it like a punter now, so I'm only interested once Manuizier says he's going to do that. And I'm not here to advise anybody, but if she turned up in the long distance cup, I'd be backing her, I think. I think she's a... you've got to aim at an arc when you've got a filly like that, I think. But I don't think she's good enough. And not by masses, but by enough that I wouldn't be going anywhere near it. Well, she was 7-1 before the Yorkshire Oaks. I don't know what she is now. I think she's an interesting horse. And the staying division is there for the taking with a proper champion now, because Stradivarius isn't quite what he was. And probably never was, you know, a massively... you know, he was always a horse that just gets it done because he quickens better than the stayers around him. I think that is a division where you could just come in and dominate. And Subjectivist might have done that, but obviously he's injured now. So, yeah, I think there's still space to be the best stayer around.
We'll see if a new horse can sort of stake their claims on the division as the season goes on with the likes of the St. Ledger, etc. Right, Doncaster Cup. It's good to soft ground. Trushan v Stradivarius, both even money. Who would you have your money on, Keith?
Depends how fast they go. Sorry. if I see no pace in the race, I back Stradivarius. If I see, you know, a couple of front runners in there, the potential for them to get stretched out, I look at the prices. There's a price at which I'd back Trushan in those circumstances. If it's one of those standards, sort of cruise and pounce type races, I think Stradivarius still has it in him.
Wow. Okay, G-Rod, do you agree with what Keith was saying on Stradivarius?
Yeah, I think he is. He is obviously slightly below his very best. I think he is on the wane, but he's still very good, isn't he? And he's still more than capable of mopping up top class staying races, as he showed last week. And wasn't it fantastic to see the way that he put his head down and saw off Spanish Mission? I must admit, I was watching the race and I thought, there's only going to be one winner at the end of this when they come to the line. Stradivarius will have his head in front somehow. And sure enough, he did. He is a great winner, isn't he, Stradivarius? He's got an amazing win record. Was that his 18th win or something along those lines? So he just is a win machine. And for that reason, he's not the easiest horse always to get a handle on, because I think he does just tend to only do what is required. Although, albeit this time, I think he had a bit more of a scare than we've seen in the past when he's just come past them and blown them away. Obviously, this time he had to really fight for it, but he showed he had the heart, if anyone had doubted it before. I think if it came to good soft ground in the Doncaster Cup, I think that Trusham will have the legs of him. I think that he is the improving stayer in the division, and he can probably run 2 or 3 pounds below his very, very best Trusham and still get the better of Stradivarius. But I don't expect him to, because I do think that he is going forward, and I think that he has got the possibility of running to mid-120s, which Stradivarius was at his very, very best. I think that they were very confident as well, the connections of Trusham last week. They seemed desperate to run him, almost as though he was very, very well at home, and they thought that he could win on any ground. Of course, in the end, he didn't line up, and they did pull him out on the good to firm ground. But I got the feeling that they really, really fancied their chances of turning Stradivarius over last week, and they were desperate to run, but obviously it didn't happen. And I think, having seen the way that Stradivarius only just scraped home past Spanish Mission, you would probably think that maybe they would have won had conditions stayed right for them. It's a fascinating division for me. It's just a shame that Subjectivist isn't still around, because what a race it would have been between Stradivarius, Subjectivist and Trusham. And of course, Spanish Mission, who isn't that far behind them. I think we've got four very good stayers, possibly one or two really top class ones, Subjectivist, Stradivarius and Trusham. And I just hope at some point we get to see them run against each other, Maddie, because it's one race after the other, isn't it? You think, oh, the big clash is coming, then it doesn't happen. Oh, the big clash is coming now, it doesn't happen. Please, just before the end of the season, let's have the big clash. Let's see them all race against each other. What a prospect it could be.
What if they do that? Remember about 12, 13 years ago, they got Federer and Nadal to play each other. Federer was on grass and Nadal was on clay at the end of the court. I wonder if we do it that way. You know, you just get Trusham. You can run, you know, 50 yards less, but you can get your soft ground there. In Stradivarius, we've got the road next door for you.
That's what makes it so good, though, isn't it? Having the two sort of opposing types up against each other. And I think for a lot of people, that was the result of the whole week, really, wasn't it? Not necessarily because, you know, we get stuck into the form side of it and the figures and the nitty-gritty betting viewpoint, but just to see two horses like that go nose to nose in the final furlong was just brilliant viewing, wasn't it? One of the other races that was brilliant viewing also came on Friday, and that was the Coolmore Wootton Bassett Nunthorpe Stakes. It was won by Winter Power. She was a dominant winner in the end. Much of the pre-race hype revolved around Wesley Ward's Golden Pal, who did indeed help blaze that trail in the early stages, but he faded away. It was a tale of woe if you back Swacer like me. She was slowly away and then could never lay a finger on Winter Power, who just over this quick five furlongs managed to see it out really well under Sylvester D'Souza for Tim Easterby. Is she the best sprinter in the world right now, Graham?
At York over five furlongs, definitely Winter Power is the best sprinter around. But that's the thing, isn't it, with these sprint races, is that the conditions and the type of track and they all play a big part. We saw Winter Power run a similar sort of race, I thought, in the race at Ascot, the King's Stand, when she blazed the trail up front with Liberty Beach, who was also in this race, and blazed the trail, and Batash. But you see, the stiff uphill finish at Ascot, she was just found out, I felt, because they went off really, really fast that day. Now, I think they've gone off just as quickly here. Winter Power and obviously Golden Power going a ridiculous pace early. But York is a different test to Ascot, isn't it? It's a much faster five furlongs. It isn't that stiff uphill finish. And Winter Power was able to keep up the gallop this time on this track. I remember when she won early in the season at the May meeting, the Dante. I'd never heard of her before, Winter Power, and I saw her win, and I was like, wow, that looks fast. And sure enough, it was Winter Power. And straight after that race, I thought she would win the Nunthorpe. I think even Paul Keighley might have tipped her anti-post somewhere along the line straight after that race, because she just looked tailor-made for this race. And this race is a race that seems to suit a certain type of horse, isn't it? Do you remember Mecca's Angel won it a couple of times, and there's been some weird results. Well, do you remember Alpha Delfini, was it? Did he win or went very close? And I think that horses who like York tend to have a very good record in it, because I do think that five furlongs at York is a very unique test. But Sueza obviously had absolutely no chance coming away that slowly over a quick five furlongs. I thought Steel ran very well. And Dragon Symbol, they must be pulling their hair out with that horse, because what a horse Dragon Symbol is. But he's still yet to chalk up that Group 1. He's run several good races at the top level. If there is a horse in training who deserves a sprint Group 1, it is surely Dragon Symbol.
Do you think he'll get it this year at Haydock or even on Champions Day?
I'm not sure he will, Maddie, because he's had quite a tough season, hasn't he, for a three-year-old sprinter. He's been on the go now for quite a while. He's had a bunch of what must have been hard races, albeit I know they're only five and six furlongs. And I always think that these late races at Haydock and the likes, they always tend to throw up strange results, don't they? I mean, how many times has that Prix de l'Abbé thrown up a weird result? I'm not sure that Dragon Symbol will pick one up this season, but hopefully he will next year. He's definitely got the ability to win one, hasn't he?
He has. He's been running fantastically and was so unlucky in that Commonwealth Cup, wasn't he, to be demoted. Prix de l'Abbé for Winter Power, Keith. Do you think she can go on to win that? Her trainer surely thinks there's much more left that she's got to give. She is still only three, remember?
Absolutely. And she's very quick as well. The l'Abbé, I mean, you wait for the draw as much as anything, you know, because it's a massive draw race. But also, a lot of the time, you possibly don't want to get sucked in by a horse that's already got such an overwhelming balance of their form on the straight course at York. That tends to be the profile of horses that struggle to do it elsewhere. Hope I'm wrong about Winter Power, because she's electric. But she is, you know, everything's been at York so far. I thought Friday's race was one of the most archetypal five furlong York races I've ever seen. Anything that was remotely slowly away or can't keep up is just gone, it's dead. And the horses on the front are the ones that don't come back. But you can also go too fast, as Golden Pal did. He's got a little... I mean, why did anybody... He was short like he was on his hype man, wasn't he? His trainer's much better than most at hyping up his horses. And his form at Keeneland was quite impressive. But was it really worthwhile making him favourite ahead of Sueza, who is clearly a brilliant horse? The one thing with Sueza that I wanted to mention, obviously she was very impressive at Goodwood in the King George. That race was quite rare for a sprint, certainly a five furlong sprint on that downhill track, and that they didn't go hell for leather all the way. And that meant she could keep up. When they do something like this, when she goes to Nunthorpe, where they absolutely blast off and Winter Power's blasted off and not come back, can she keep up? That's the thing to ask about.
Back to six, would you go?
I don't know. But what I'm saying is that in these absolute burn-up 5F races, she might find that's where she gets undone. I think she probably is the best horse in the world, given the right conditions. It's unfortunate for her that the King's Stand isn't and still to come this season, because I think, you know, a stiff five might be absolutely perfect. This is just something to watch with Sueza. She is extremely good. I think we might have to watch the conditions under which we back her to show that. You know, she might be a horse that doesn't suit these burn-up fives the very best, and maybe, I don't know, maybe would you go for the 5.5 furlong race at the Breeders' Cup or something? That might be the sort of race that she'll win. I don't know, but yeah, I just wonder about these absolute raw 5-furlong burn-ups, because Goodwood did play to the strengths of a horse that needs to keep up for the first two furlongs more than you would think of your average King George at Goodwood.
I definitely think you can mark up her performance on Friday, certainly anyway. Now we're going to take a quick breather, but after we're going to get a handicap performance from each of Keith and Graham and start to talk about some of the two-year-olds we've got to look forward to for the rest of the season.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back. Now, so much good action at York last week. We've not even tipped towards the handicap performances. So I'm going to get one standout run from each of our panellists today. Keith, I'll let you go first. Who caught your eye out of the big field handicaps?
Yeah, now at York, Mary, the only races I've watched at the sort of granular level I'd like to have mostly been the staying races, certainly in terms of the handicaps. And I thought the Melrose was a better race than the Ebor myself. These are really progressive three-year-olds all the way through. Now, I'm looking at the top six here. Valley Forge was really, how he just knifed through the field on the bridle was really, really impressive. Mishawar, I thought, was still green. Ravenscraig Castle is extremely unexposed and just won on his ear at ear the time before. Dushan was in the middle of the track and maybe that wasn't the place to be, although he did ultimately switch. And Tashgan and King of the Castle have reasons to be marked up too. I mean, I just think you follow that form. It looks extremely good to me. And it often does work out the Melrose form, so you're not going to get Rich doing that particularly. But these horses are going to turn up in races subsequent. I mean, Ravenscraig Castle's rated 78. He's going to go up £2 and could run in a 0-88 again next time. He's a very, very progressive horse that needs to be taken seriously. King of the Castle, I thought, if you could tell me his head was straight, I would say he deserved marking up quite a lot. But yet, I'm not going to name a horse. I'm just going to say, look, follow that Melrose form, because that first five or six are all very good horses. In fact, I'd even put in a little mitigation for Surrey Gold, who, apologies to viewers, at least those who didn't back first eight, because he finished eighth. But he was in the middle of the track a little bit. I think he was a little bit better than that, but I'm not saying he should have been, you know, placed in the classical sense or anything, but he'll do better than that one day. So yeah, just follow that Melrose form. It's great.
Well done, Keith. And Graham, what about you?
Yeah, I quite liked the race on Friday that was won by Sam Cook. It was called the Sky Bet Handicap. Yeah, a mile and four furlongs. I thought that Sam Cook won that race very, very well. I actually backed Frohn Hall in that race, and I thought he was just going to hold everything. They kept coming to Frohn Hall, and he kept pushing them away, turning them away. And then I just looked in behind, and there was Sam Cook, and he was just travelling like an absolute express train. And I was thinking, please don't find anything. Please don't find anything. And sure enough, Sam Cook did. He went away and won well. But I thought that for that reason, it was a bit of a standout performance in the handicaps, really, because when you see a horse that is so obviously travelling well, who then goes and puts the race to bed in the way that Sam Cook did, from a horse in Frohn Hall, who, like I say, had pretty much batted away every other challenger, I thought that was a good race. I've been following Frohn Hall for a long time. He was disappointing at Ascot when I think he fell out the traps and then he pulled really hard in rear and then he was tailed off again next time, I think. But this was a real good effort from Frohn Hall, back over a mile and a half, because he'd been run over a mile and six on his previous start. So yeah, that was the race for me that I'll be taking a few out of the 150 at York on Friday. Sam Cook beat Frohn Hall. I think they're both useful horses going forward.
Two horses who are certainly very useful are Point Lonsdale and Reach for the Moon. The former beat the latter in the Chesham Stakes at Royal Ascot. He's still unbeaten. He won the Futurity Stakes in Ireland over the weekend. And Reach for the Moon won the Solario at Sandown on Saturday. How do these two horses compare, Keith? And whose side would you be on next year? Indeed, if you look at the 2000 Guineas betting, Point Lonsdale's a 7-1 favourite. Reach for the Moon at double the odds at 14s and even 16s in some places.
Yeah, this was the one that I didn't want to be brought in on.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, that's my bad. I'll go again. Apologies, guys. G-Rod, let's talk about some of the juveniles now. And Point Lonsdale beat Reach for the Moon in the Chesham Stakes at Royal Ascot earlier on in the season. Indeed, Aidan O'Brien's challenger remained unbeaten in the Futurity Stakes in Ireland over the weekend, whereas John Gosden's charge won the Solario Stakes at Sandown. How do they compare and who would you rather be on going forward? In terms of next year's 2,000 guineas, Point Lonsdale is the 7-1 favourite. Reach for the Moon, double that price.
I thought that Reach for the Moon looked far from the finished article, Maddie, at Sandown at the weekend. I thought that he was still a little bit free and maybe still a little bit green as well. But I like the way that he powered home. He was really strong up the straight at Sandown, which is always a good sign. Of course, that is a race that John Gosden has won with some smart horses before. I think he won it with Raven's Pass and Too Darn Hot, and some of his other stars competed in it as well. So he obviously holds Reach for the Moon in high regard. And when he finished second behind Point Lonsdale, the Point Lonsdale was backed as if the defeat was out of the question. They don't get it wrong too often at Ballydoyle, do they? And the vibes coming out of there then were that Point Lonsdale was a very, very good horse. So the fact that Reach for the Moon was able to give him a race, and the pair pulled, I think, a 3¼ lengths clear of the rest at Ascot, marked those down as possibly two of the best two-year-olds we were going to see this season. And so it's proving, because obviously Point Lonsdale won very impressively at the Curragh on Saturday night as well. A very, very short price double if you wanted to do it. But I don't think you would have ever had any worries because Point Lonsdale made all and looked relentless. He looks a bit more professional, a typical Ballydoyle type, in that he looks like he's already the finished article in some ways. And he probably will keep on improving given the way that they train them. But he really does put his head down, try, battle away. I wouldn't be any worries about him going around Epsom at all. I think that he will be almost the ideal type for it next year, which is no surprise. I think he is favourite for the Derby. And I think that they are two of the best two-year-old colts we've seen this season. And not only that, they both have got potential for a huge amount of improvement at three. Possibly Reach for the Moon's got more scope for improvement, given that to me he still looks a bit unfurnished. I wouldn't want to choose between the two, but I think next season, come the classics, provided all goes well and there's no injury holdups or anything like that, Point Lonsdale and Reach for the Moon will both be competing in the 2,000 guineas in the Derby, and they'll both go very well, I'm sure, because they do look outstanding at the current time.
And how good would it be for racing, for Her Majesty the Queen, to have a horse as good as Reach for the Moon running in the guineas, in the Derby? It would be monumental, wouldn't it? Now, elsewhere, let's go to Deauville on Sunday. And Perfect Power won a deep renewal of the pre-morning from Andre Farb's Trident. Asymmetric, the Goodwood winner, was back in third. And the favourite, Armour, for Richard Hannon and Pat Dobbs, only fourth. This looked deep beforehand. We also had Quick Susie and Velocidad, two Irish trained horses who had shown what they were capable of prior to this. Perfect Power, he righted that Goodwood form. Do you think this is form that's going to be upheld in the likes of the Middle Park, Keith?
I don't know. I watched this race and on the first viewing, I thought, God, that's quickened up really well, hasn't it? And I went and they're publishing sectionals in French racing now on the France Gallo site. So I had a little look in there, and with the caveat that I'm not particularly au fait with pars and standards at Deauville, the story actually told was more of, there was a lot of horses in there, and Asymmetric and Armour are very fast horses. Gabas won the Super Sprint as well. I think he might be the only one, not going to say he outstayed them. I don't think it's really or easily possible to outstay horses in 6 furlong races. He was finishing stronger. He wasn't quickening up. He was sustaining his effort better than the very fast horses around him. So yes, that means he's very suitable for the Middle Park. It also means that part of the reason he won that race was because of his greater staying power at that trip. Obviously going to be a runner in the Middle Park, and obviously going to suit it better because he's Sire's our dad, isn't he, who was obviously a very quick two-year-old, but the dam side suggests a mile plus. So just that little blend means he's going to stay 6 furlongs very well this year. Clearly marked himself as a good horse in the Goodwood race, and evidently is one now. So he's a proper runner in the middle park, but just wanted to add a bit of context to how it looks like that race panned out the way it did.
Okay, his dam won over 10 furlongs as a three-year-old, but I'm interested in whether these Ardads are going to train on. It's an impossible question to answer in many ways, but knowing what we know now, what's your instinct? Because I don't think he did. It's a similar case with Memas, isn't it, that we had a couple of years ago, Keith?
Yeah, and that what you tend to find is obviously Perfect Power. He's had a mare sent to him who was a little bit more stamina laden. Will they train on? I think a lot of the time with these horses, it becomes self-fulfilling because these quick two-year-olds often get the quick mares, and it looks like they don't train on because you've got a horse that's definitely just bred to be a two-year-old. Perfect Power isn't so much. So this is an instance where it'd be very, very difficult. They are dads that, you know, you've sent a speedy mare to, or a precocious mare to. Yeah, they're not going to train on because that's just not in their pedigree at all. I just couldn't say with a horse like Perfect Power. It's very hard to judge.
Physically, I thought he looked powerful, but quite small. And obviously with that Kodiak blood in there, I'd be interested to see if he did grow into his three-year-old season. G-Rod, a quick word on the pre-Morning and indeed the races like the Middle Park that we're going to see later on this season for these faster two-year-olds.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh here, but I thought that it seemed to be a bit of an advantage to be racing towards the stand side there. And I certainly don't think that Armour was in the right spot over on the trying to charge right up the middle of the track. And in the following race, where the Prix Jean Romanet, which was won by Grand Glory at a huge price, again, I think they seem to race more towards the stand side. And some of the more fancied runners, including Lady Beaufort, they're very disappointing. He was kept towards the inside, which, again, I didn't see loads of racing at Deauville, but I just got that feeling that maybe there was slightly better ground towards the stand side. And the other thing with the pre-morning is that it's now starting to look a little bit like they might all be beating each other, isn't it? Which is always a little bit of a concern, because I know that Perfect Power was unlucky in the Richmond, but he had finished behind Asymmetric, who's then gone and reversed the form with and beat in this race. Of course, Armour has looked absolutely brilliant at Goodwood and then been beaten in this race. And I just always think when you see horses just reversing the form with each other, especially at this early stage of their career, always just makes me wonder how strong this Group 1 form is and whether we are seeing the real stars. I think that going forward, as we just discussed, Point Lonsdale, Reach for the Moon are far more exciting than Perfect Power.
Okay, so a note of caution there from G-Rod. Now, what's coming up this week? Well, we have the likes of the Celebration Mile at Ascot, some other good cards in the next 5 days or so. But let's get the lads' naps, as that's the most important part of this section of the show. Keith, I will go to you first. Take it away, please. Who's your best bet coming up this week?
Yeah, I'm not sure G-Rod's going to thank me for this one. We both fancy this horse, as far as I understand. We've got a meeting at Salisbury on Tuesday. The last three races are all staying races, and we've looked at them this morning. The 7.05 there, it's the first division. They've divided one of those handicaps. And Sulichana is back into this sort of grade, having run a couple of times at a slightly higher level, but the last time he ran at Bath, it was such a messy race at Bath. He was finished second to Running Cloud. I thought he shaped as well as the winner, quite honestly. And obviously he's been dropped another £2 for his trouble. He's back into the sort of grade where he just looked like he was a different species to horses in this grade earlier in the season when he was winning. There's no rain forecast between when we record this and Tuesday evening when the race takes place. Got a lot going for him. Yeah, Sulichana and the 7.05 at Salisbury.
Okay, Hugh Morrison hoping to, in some way, cheer his yard up after finishing second in the Ebel then. G-Rod, has he stolen your tip?
Yeah, well, I do like Sue Luchana, that's for sure. I thought that like Keith, it was by far the most likely winner of that race. Of course, the most exciting horse to run this week, if he does the turn up, will be Baid, who's in the Celebration Mile, isn't it, at Goodwood.
Also with the option of the Prix de Moulin, though, so he might go there. Mm.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Well, I don't think there's any doubt. He is definitely a group one horse, not just a group horse. He is a group one horse. And, you know, he's going to be very, very difficult to beat wherever he runs. I also fancy him to win the big one against Palace Pier and alike when the time comes. I'm sure he will be bang there. But, yeah, mine's also on Tuesday, my nap of the week, and it's the 3:20 at Musselburgh tomorrow. And it's called Old Socks Havana. This one caught my eye last time out at Wolverhampton, made very good late progress from the rear over 7 furlongs. And he'd previously been generally campaigned over shorter 6 furlongs. It appeared to be his optimum, but I thought the way that he shaped in that race gave a lot of encouragement for his possibilities of winning over this trip. They've stuck on the tongue tie and cheek pieces this time, usually wears a visor, so they're switching up the headgear. And Jason Watson is booked to ride for David O'Mara, which is not a combination that you see very often. So my nap of the week is in a 3:20 at Musselburgh on Tuesday, Odd Socks Havana.
Tell you what, you're brilliant. A brave man, Gino, napping in a 0-50 classified stakes.
That is, isn't it? He's got guts. One of our big interviews this week was with Jason Watson. That's surely a very good piece of members club content. Lewis Porteous spoke to the jockey who has just severed ties with Roger Charlton, of course. So keep your eye out for that on the Racing Post website and indeed in the paper. That's all we've got time for on today's show. Please make sure you rate, review and subscribe. And Bruce will be back with the team on Friday to get some of those best bets looking ahead for the weekend. We'll see you soon.